from the book The Open Door of Emptiness by James Lowe. Chapter 3. Open to Life, the Heart of Awareness. Part 7. The energy of openness is misapprehended. The root of all these transient moments of identity is our basic being, which is beyond totalization. You can't sum yourself up. This is the basic freedom of all human beings, and it is why totalitarian states are so dreadful, so terrifying. There are still many countries in the world where human beings are given a number. They are summed up in a simplifying definition. They are seen as terrorists or the enemy. When that occurs, the availability of other people's minds to see the infinity of the potential of that person collapses into a very narrow, dogmatic reading of the person, which is then taken to be a true account of who they really are. We also do this, though in more subtle ways. We reify other people, treating them as knowable entities, and we also see ourselves as existing as things. We objectify others, and we objectify ourselves. We judge others, and we judge ourselves. This limiting, narrowing, imprisoning structure has infected our own mind. Its rigidity and predictive force gives us a sense of power, yet it is, itself, just movement. We can probably all remember coming home from school one day and saying to our mum, "Oh, I hate Johnny. I'm not going to play with him anymore." "Why not? I thought he was your best friend." "Ah, well, he did that to me." When you're a kid, such events are really terrible and seem so completely real and final. Oh, don't take it so seriously. "No, I'm never going to be his friend again." Something has happened that has generated a definite knowledge that he's horrible. Some moment has happened between you and your friend, and suddenly it's as if there's a tear. There's an event which you can't integrate, which you can't incorporate into the flow of experience. And so there is division, splitting. We know this nowadays in terms of post-traumatic stress disorder, where there is a trauma or powerful event which cannot be integrated into the continuum of the person's psychological life. And so there is a lesion, a tear that feeds into repetitions and so on. The world has changed. I cannot put up with this. In order to free ourselves from the many forms of limitation we encounter in meditation practice, we listen to the solidity of the way in which these thought formations arise. We're not trying to stop the thoughts coming, or trying to push them away, nor are we falling into them. Rather, we see that they are enticing, sticky, full of an energy that makes us want to throw ourselves onto them. This is like the story from the Odyssey, where the sirens are singing on the rocks, and whoever hears these marvellous women singing will want to row directly towards them. But then, their boats are smashed to pieces on the rocks. What is this incredible glue that binds us into temporary situations, both internal and external, and makes them seem completely true. Why is something which is arising due to causes and conditions, and is clearly contingent and contextual, taken to exemplify an essence? Once the sense of an essence catches us, there is a clarity, which is the clarity of stupidity. I remember when I was about 11, I saved up some money and sent away for a transistor radio that you had to partly build for yourself. I asked my dad to help me, and he looked at it, and then he said, "This is made in Japan." I said, "Okay." And he said, "I fought the Japanese in Burma, and I won't have anything Japanese in the house." I said, "Dad, the war's over." And he said, "I don't want anything Japanese in this house. I don't like the Japanese." We didn't know any Japanese people. We were living in Scotland, and there were not many of them there. But he felt that, in his mind, "I know what the Japanese are. They are this, and this, and this, and I will never forget." He had his experience of the world, and there was some truth, some painful basis for his belief. But it became a huge global identification which can be layered again and again into new situations. We know that there are many prejudices about racial and religious groups and so on that go on generation after generation. It is exactly this sort of structure which we experience in meditation. We get a chance to see directly our over-investment in certain ideas as being absolutely true. If you just stay present with the thought will go. Thoughts, feelings, and sensations are always passing. They are impermanent. But when we think that this is a terrible thought, and so I want it out, or that this is a wonderful thought, and so I need to have more thoughts like it, then the glue is working, and we are stuck on the treadmill, working hard, but getting nowhere. This activity of yes and no, editing and adjusting, although it appears to be overtly a good thing to do, becomes the basis of not being able to be at home with who you actually are. Energy, which by its very nature is connectivity, is directed towards the endless task of self-maintenance. The energy of openness is misapprehended as being our energy and directed towards the activities of adjusting, shaping, and defining. This is so familiar that we easily take it to be just how it is. Yet, who is doing it? Who is the thinker of the thought? Who is the experiencer? These questions are subtle, and the answer is unhidden, yet elusive. So we readily return to our habitual preoccupations. Ah, never mind that. Let's get the content of the experience right. And when all the experiences are lined up in a row, and they're all very nice, and they're all wearing clean underpants, then you'll know that life's completely sorted. And it never happens. By focusing on correcting the shape of our thoughts and feelings, our life quickly passes as we try our best with an impossible task. Actually, we live at the crossroads. If you stay with how you are, even if it seems terrible, that situation will vanish and you will find yourself to be where you actually are. But if you decide not to be where you are because you feel that there is a better place to be, then the energy that goes into doing that displaces you from where you are and sets you on a never-ending task of improvement. So, paradoxically, doing less gives more, while doing more keeps you feeling the alienation of lack and hunger. The activity of trying to improve the content while ignoring the experiential field within which the content is occurring places us in the world of endless construction of our ideal identity. This is something which, at best, we only ever briefly taste for a short period of time, for the perfect thought is replaced by another, and then another thought comes, and another thought comes. Our identity is not something which can be sorted, because it is part of the web of connectivity. If you have friends, or if you know people, or if you are political, or if you have children, if you worry, then these are signs that you are concerned. Other people affect you. Other people impact your life. So, how could you be stable? Being alive means being unstable. Unstable doesn't mean being out of control. It means dynamic. It means moving as part of the world. Openness and becoming. Exploring Karach and Lundrup. With this orientation, we can now look at two key aspects of the Dzogchen view and practice. These are Karach, the natural purity of the mind, and Lundrup, spontaneous display or manifestation. Primordial purity indicates that the mind is empty, like a mirror. My subjectivity, what I take to be I, me, myself, is part of the moving content of my mind. It is like a reflection in the mirror. It's not the mirror itself. If I confuse the reflection with the mirror itself, I'm going to have a problem. The mirror is reliably a mirror because it never shows itself directly. It shows itself through the manifesting of reflections. The clarity of the mind, our presence, our capacity to know, rather than knowledge itself, is always open, empty, and available. Whereas reflections are much less predictable because they arise in situations. That is to say, they are an aspect of communication, of identity, of showing, not of being. Whatever comes in front of the mirror brings about a different reflection. Similarly, our experience is situational, influenced by the weather, by the kind of food we eat, by our health, the menstrual cycle, by whether we're getting on well at work, and so on. All sorts of things influence how we are in our experience of the world. This unfolding never stops. It is constantly moving. Now, if you place an object in front of the mirror and leave it there, it may appear that the reflection is stable, is something reliably there. This something which can be returned to again and again. But the reflection as object requires the subject in order to reveal itself. And their intercourse is the flow of experience. The question then is, where will I find stability? Only in the state of the mirror. For awareness itself is stable in its inseparability from space. The experiences which arise are not stable. So if you think that your subjectivity is stabilizable, is something you can make firm, fixed, and predictable, that you can gain enduring self-knowledge, then you take the wrong road at the crossroads and condemn yourself to trying to make movement stop. But movement is always moving. The mind is always moving. It's not the movement of the mind that is the problem. It's our difficulty in allowing the mind to move as it moves. And there is another paradox here. The more tightly you try to control the mind, the more jumpy it becomes. And the more space you give to the mind, the more its flow is harmonious. Trusting the actuality of existence, believing all will be okay, allows the diaphragm to relax, anxiety to diminish, and then the free flow of self and other plays without disruption. This is what is referred to as Lundrup, spontaneous manifestation, which is direct and effortless. The open purity and simplicity of our mind reveals itself as the ever-changing field of complex illusory manifestation. As we look around the room, everything is here. Immediately, this is our experience. Wherever we go, there is a world. We don't get half a world, we get this world, the fullness of this moment of experience. Our concepts of other places arise within the field of experience, which is me in this room. Each moment is complete and perfect as it is. This is just this, then this. So you can look at this room here in two ways. One way is to come into your skin. You can do this now. Feel your own skin. Feel your own body. I'm here, this is me, and I'm looking out at the world. You're there, and I'm here. We are not the same. You can look around at all these people sitting over there. I'm sitting here, you're sitting there. This is where I am. This is me, and this is you. I am me, and you are you. It feels very separate, doesn't it? Another way is to relax and release our interpretations, to allow the actuality of the simultaneous presenting of subject and object. They present to our presence, which is immediate, infinite, intimate, but not personal, and certainly not a personal possession or quality. Thus, there is the experience of your body, in that your body is revealed as certain sensations in the feet, the legs, the torso, and so on. And this is arising at the same time as the perception of everything around you. These are two areas of perception, and they are fundamentally the same. Similarly, we see people and we hear sounds. The visual perception and the sound are not the same in their forms of manifesting, but they are both experiences devoid of substance. I am my experience of me, just as you are your experience of you. The experience is infinite, the hospitable host of all the myriad transient experiences which arise, some of which we take to, or use to, constitute ourselves. Some of which we take to, or use to, constitute our world, and all that is in it. This is radically different from our normal way of thinking, because it indicates that my home base is not this material form, the fleshy castle that I inhabit. I am in the world, with the world. The world and I have the same status as appearances in the flow of experience. We are the eyes of the world. We are the way the world experiences itself, as display rather than as substance. This is the mandala of all the Buddhas. Actually, we live in this field of lucid clarity all the time. We are an inalienable part of it. The body is clarity, and the experience around us is clarity. The clarity of experience is instant. The emptiness of the mind and the fullness of the mind are inseparable, non-dual, without contradiction. We are the playful richness of the mind's display. Our body, for us, is special, but it's special within the world. It's not special apart from the world. We are moving in the world the way fish are swimming in the sea. We don't move towards the world. We don't have a separate domain, my private self, my internal world, out of which I go towards you. My movement towards you is always my movement with you within the infinite, indivisible field of experience. If I'm in my own head, in my thoughts, then, of course, I can construct 1,000 forms of alienation and imagine games of manipulating and controlling. Yet all of these are experiences revealed in the mirror of the experiencer. They are not separate things, but aspects of experience. The feeling of being within myself, being apart, is an experience non-dually, not actually separate from the ceaseless displaying field of experience. In the simplicity of direct presence, I am revealed to myself within the same field of experience as you are revealed to me. This is the non-duality of self and other, and hence, how I am is part of how you are. There is no need for the paranoid feeling that I have to ring-fence the private domain to keep out the foreigners, the strangers, in order to protect the purity of my own vision. We don't need to each establish an Aryan personal people's party, membership, only myself. I am the chairman and the life president. Keep out. It's amazing how easy it is for us, as individuals or small groups with a dogmatic sense of sameness, to succumb to that belief and then imagine that everybody else is a potential contaminator of the purity of yourself or of ourselves. The pristine purity that we all have and are is the purity of awareness, not the purity of personality. The purity of awareness can never be destroyed. But the purity of the personality is an illusion, because we are co-emerging with the world. Identity is dialogue, not individual essence. Practice. Let's do some practice. We sit with our eyes open, gazing into the space about two arms' lengths in front of us. We're not staring at the distant wall, but just letting our gaze relax into the space. This means that our gaze is open and panoramic, so we have a sense of this large space. Just relax into the out-breath and be present with whatever is occurring. Sometimes this is predominantly object phenomena, and sometimes subject phenomena. Experience how both are movements without essence, and in this there is no real difference between them. With this kind of practice, we sit for quite short periods of time at first, 5 minutes, then 10 minutes, and so on, because it is subtle, and we are used to something more crude. We have a strong habit of identifying with the subjective form as being ourselves. And of course, as soon as you do that, because subject and object are born together, you can get caught up in the object flow as well, and they mutually reinforce. So relax into open presence, which reveals both aspects as the movement of the mind, as the energy of the mind. We are not trying to do anything at all, but simply to be with how things are. If we are given a task where we can mobilize ourselves, whether it's weeding the garden or doing the dishes, even if we don't want to do it, we can do it, and can get a sense of personal empowerment through the activity. It's the same with thinking, the personality, the spiral of self-reference has sucked into itself such a lot of importance that it feels as if it is the centre of the world. However, in this practice, the personality, our individual sense of self, is decentered and allowed to take its actual place as a series of momentary events. It's not that there is no self. Clearly, we have a self. But the self is an energetic formation which is moving and changing. It's not the center. It's part of the pulsation of our display. And it arises in communication. In the practice, we relax and release the pull of our habitual over-identification with a form of energy, as if it were the source of activity. Teachings given at Bright Elm Centre, Brighton, UK, December 2012. Revised by James Lowe. From the book The Open Door of Emptiness, a collection of public talks and teachings by James Lowe. Read by Wendy, March 2025.